Jana, the little sister.
And I'm Jeff, her big brother. Welcome to Sibling Rivalry, a podcast about our favorite sport, baseball.
This week on Sibling Rivalry Baseball, we...
Jana, what are you doing? Jana? Jana? What in the world is going on? Well, while I figure all that out, and where Jan is, check out these SRBB headlines. Former Angel skipper and three-time World Series champion Mike Socha was selected as manager of the U.S. baseball team, looking to qualify for the Tokyo Olympics this coming summer. Socha has a tall order, as the U.S. is one of 12 teams vying for two spots. Mike hopes to follow in the footsteps of his former manager, Tommy Lasorda, who managed the U.S. team to a gold medal in the 2000 Olympics. It looks like Socha isn't the only one coming out of retirement. As of now, former Dodger All-Star Adrian Gonzalez hopes to play for Mexico, while former Angel Ian Kinsler plans to play for Israel. Other recently retired players hope to play for their countries in the upcoming Olympics as well. Hideki Matsuyama became the first Japanese golfer to win the Masters Tournament at Augusta National. He shot 10 under par over the tourney, grabbing over $2 million in prize money and, of course, the iconic green jacket. Deshaun Watson of the Houston Texans has been sued by more than 20 women alleging sexual misconduct, among other charges. Watson, who asked to be traded this offseason, is under investigation by the Houston PD and the NFL. Due to the alleged charges, Nike, Reliant K, Beats by Dre, and others have ended, suspended, or will discontinue their endorsement deals with Watson. You can find these and past week's headlines on our website, SiblingRivalryBB.com. Remember to rate and subscribe wherever you listen, and tell a friend to listen to the Sibling Rivalry Baseball Podcast. Okay, so I don't know what just happened here. Jana has vanished. So, from all the sounds in that, sounds like she might have been abducted by aliens or something. Not sure. I had to ask myself while the headlines were going, what would Jana want me to do? And she would want me to talk about baseball. So, that's what I'm going to do. We're going to continue to talk about baseball and hope that she turns up somewhere soon. It really did sound like she was abducted by aliens. I don't know. Is that a thing? Is that, well, she is in New Mexico, and she's not far from Roswell, so it could be. So I was thinking about baseball, and especially about things that Jan and I talk about. And last season, we didn't get to talk about all of baseball. We got to talk about Major League Baseball and, you know, trying to get the season started. Once the season started, it was kind of the same thing over and over because the teams all played just the same, you know, few teams from the, you know, the Western teams played the West and so on. But we didn't get to talk about college baseball. We didn't get to talk about the experimental, the minor leagues. So those are things that we'll talk about this year. Right now, it looks like college baseball is being run by a football conference in the SEC. The top five ranked baseball teams are all SEC teams: Vanderbilt, Arkansas, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, and Florida. They are definitely, Vanderbilt has a lot of players that come out. It seems like Louisville's another one that has a lot of players that end up in the majors or get drafted high. So we'll talk more about that as we go, but that's just something we want to pick up on. And then coming up on June 19th in Omaha, the College World Series will start up, which is one of our favorite events of the year, which of course didn't happen last year. With the minors, now Jana, when she's not being abducted by aliens, lives near the Albuquerque Isotopes and Colorado Rockies AAA team. And they start up their season on May 6th, so she'll probably get to go see them. I live about 70 miles from the closest minor league teams, and this year they're low A teams. Both the Dodgers and the Angels have Rancho Cucamonga and San Bernardino. So going out to see them now, they start in May as well. They start May 4th. The AAA season starts May 6th. AAA will go 142 games, whereas the low A goes at 120 games. And this season, the 66ers, which is the Angels team, will take on the Quakes, which is the Dodgers team. And that's how they'll start their season. The Isotopes will start on May 6th versus the Sugarland Skeeters, which is a brand new AAA team for the Asterix. Those are things that we're going to want to, you know, talk about a little more, because it's not just about our love of baseball. Isn't just about, oh, major leagues. Obviously, that's where the biggest things are. But the just baseball as a whole, I mean, I've been known to see a Little League game and just stop and watch the Little League game. You know, baseball is wonderful at any level. Another thing I wanted to talk about a little bit this time was we've seen a lot of bad plays at the beginning of the season, poor base running, you know, mistakes that they shouldn't be made. But we've also seen quite a few bad calls. I think robo-umpires are gaining traction, which in the minor leagues, I think it's the high A South, we'll have robo. The Southern Division teams will have the robo-ump. So we'll see how that goes, and eventually it's going to make its way. But Angel Hernandez, who called a game between the Angels and the Asterix just this last week, they did a whole story on him. It was just how bad his calls were, that most accuracy for most umpires is 94%. His was 86%. They ran a whole video of all of the bad calls, all the pitches he missed. Pitches outside, they were so far outside that when the catcher went to frame him to pull him back into the zone, he was almost in the other dugout pulling it across, and he'd call it a strike. And there were a few that were right down the middle that were strikes, and he was getting them all wrong. He's always been called out for being not a good umpire. But there was a few other calls. Braves and Phillies was probably the biggest one that got talked about, you know, through the weekend, was when Alec Boehm from the Phillies slid in versus the Braves. Travis d'Arnaud getting the ball in, gets it. Boehm doesn't touch the plate. The way that he came in, he hit a little early. His foot comes up and never comes down on the plate at any point in time. The umpire called him safe. They do the replay. Clearly, from every angle, you could see that he didn't touch the plate. And the replay upheld the play, and he was safe. There have been other plays I saw throughout the last week where, you know, the guys, I know there was one like the Dodgers, Max Muncy jumped up to get the ball. The umpire called him out, I don't know how he did that, because Max was still in the air when the runner crossed in the bag. How is he safe? When they ran the replay, he was called out because it was clear. Some of those are that clear. In this play, and that's what replay is supposed to be all about, is getting it right. And they're upholding the decision. And it makes me wonder, what is their criteria from the standpoint? Are they just looking at it to overturn the call? Or are they just trying to get it right? Because if they're trying to get it right, then it shouldn't matter what was called on the field. Once the replay comes in, it doesn't matter. He's either safe or he's out. Period. And they shouldn't worry about what the umpire called. But in this case, it seemed like they did. There was another play at the plate. The Angels and the Asterix, Martin Maldonado, came across the plate. And when he came in, his hand was on the ground. He was behind the plate. Hand was on the ground. Dust comes up. But you can see where his hand is. You can see where the tip of the plate is. He never touched the plate. But they called him safe. And I think, you know, the umpire just couldn't really tell. When they went back through the replay, it showed pretty clearly that there was a difference. There was a gap between where the tip of the plate was and where his hand was, that he never touched it. once again, they came up and, you know, it was a little harder. But, you know, if you sit there and you watched it real close, and I'm one that if I see the replay and they're safe, then they're safe, or they're out, even if it's my own team. I don't have an issue with that. But stuff like this, it's like, come on, what's the point? They need to fix replay and the umpire, and really for that. But the replay, if you're going to have it, and there's other things that need to be added. And the last point with this is Michael Conforto plays for the Mets. Up to bat, bases are loaded. It's 2-2 playing the Marlins. He's up. He's got like a big old elbow pad on his right arm. He bats left-handed. And in the process, he leans over. As the pitch is coming in, he kind of leans in. It actually looks like he's leaning into the pitch as far as instead of getting out of the way, which is what you're supposed to do. If you get hit by a pitch and you didn't make an effort to get out of the way, it looks like he leans that in, gets hit on the elbow. Now, the pitch was a strike, so it should have been a strike. That should have been, it shouldn't have been a hit by pitch, should have been a strike based on what happened. But the umpire, you can't determine from the replay, it's not reviewable whether or not he got tried to get out of the way or he leaned into it. Just confirm that he did get hit by the pitch. He gets hit by the pitch, walks in a run, Mets win 3-2. Now, if you're a Mets fan, you're happy about that. But it looks bad that, once again, these plays, why have the replay when it clearly looks like Conforto is moving his elbow? Strike, it's a dead ball when it hits him, but it's still a strike, and that should have been it. But instead, he ends up, it's ruled a hit by pitch. So I know Joe Maddon's come out recently, and he doesn't want to see too many things like the robo-ump and too much replay because he thinks it takes some of the emotion out of the game, and he's not wrong. You know, I'm not a fan of the robo-ump idea necessarily, but it's becoming more and more that it looks like a lot of these umpires need some help. And what I think is that why aren't they using more of the technology they have to constantly show these guys that? And when they're under a certain amount, you know, if you're not getting, you know, league average 94% or 90% of the calls right, you're suspended or drop down to the minors or something until you get it. You go through classes, just like when you get a traffic ticket, you can go to traffic school, something like that. There's got to be something with that. And the way that they're changing everything, they might as well change this too. Otherwise, just go back, take the replay completely out, and just go back to infuriating calls. But at least we'd know there would be the emotion back in the game. If you're using all this technology so that it could be more accurate, then use it and actually get it to be more accurate. And maybe instead of having another umpire in there, find an alternative to that. Find these kids, you know, a younger group of kids who have no tie to it and watch videos all the time and can look at it and see, oh yeah, he's out or he's safe. He didn't touch the plate and was tagged out. Somebody else, other than an umpire, another umpire who might not want to make his colleague look bad.
It's time for Dodger baseball.
So as advertised, the Dodgers are the best team in baseball. 8-2 record, which is the best in baseball. Only the Padres are really close with a 7-3. They're the two best records in baseball, and I think they're recognized really as the two best teams in baseball, even, you know, the beginning of the season. Yankees were up there, but the Dodgers and Padres. So until they meet, I did take into account that the Dodgers have played Colorado, they played Oakland, and Oakland started off horribly. Does look like they're maybe starting to get into a groove here, but they started off poorly, getting swept by the Astros. Dodgers took two of the three, and then they played the Nationals, and the Nationals, too, are not a top-tier team. They've got some great players, but they just couldn't beat the Dodgers. So the Dodgers had a pretty great weekend. They show their winning ways. Now, we've seen this before. they'll go. And like every team, they'll go for a while. They'll probably hit where they lose a couple here and there. I don't foresee them losing any of the series this season, but they could. There are some tough teams out there. They do get the Padres coming up here soon. This coming week, they've got the Rockies and the Padres. So it's not going to be necessarily too hard on them until they have to deal with the Padres. And who knows? The Padres are loaded as well. So that'll be an interesting, and you know the Padres will be up to play the Dodgers. Now, one of the biggest stories with the Dodgers came out this week was Trevor Bauer. And as we talked about recently, that Major League Baseball is going to be watching for baseballs that either have some kind of, they look like they've been doctored, sticky substances on them, something that would look like the pitchers are trying to manipulate the balls and thus improve their spin rates, their break rates. And of course, the first player to be called out with this that we're aware of, because it was a big deal about this, was Trevor Bauer. And they said they found some balls that had sticky substances or were otherwise suspect. So they took two or three, they put them in a bag, they're sent off to the lab. MLB will look at them or through their laboratory, will look at them and determine now whether or not they can prove that he put anything on them or whether there was something else that was in play there. Don't know. Now, about his balls being taken out, Trevor Bauer didn't say anything, but he did say a couple days later, it's like, well, people are overlooking that there were other balls taken out of play from other pitchers as well. They said that they were alerted to the fact that there may be some funny stuff going on, but they didn't say who told them. One of the other things we mentioned when we talked about this was spin rate and how they were going to look through the analytics through StatCast and see what the spin rate was and see if there was greater spin rate on some pitches than previously recorded, what that pitcher's norms were season to season. None of that is coming into play per what Major League Baseball is saying. We'll see how it plays out. But once again, why are we targeting, number one, targeting him? Because he's a proponent of spin rates. He's been outspoken about people using stuff. He says he doesn't. He's a student of it. His dad's an engineer. Does that mean he's using something or not using something? We don't know. We'll find out, probably. And we'll also see if they believe he is, what the punishment is. Punishment will dictate how this goes through the rest of the season. But that's, you know, one of these early things where it feels like Major League Baseball is Manfredding everything up. They've got their eye on the wrong ball. They're trying to fix things that don't need to be fixed and ignoring the things that probably could be fixed, that could be looked at. They're not looking at the whole big picture and learning how to promote better. Here's a guy who promotes himself because the league doesn't really do that much, and they only promote a couple of players. And then they got mad a couple of seasons ago at like Mike Trout because he's not the kind of guy that just goes out, like a Bryce Harper who was more brash and out there. That's what Trevor Bauer is, and now they're upset with. We're going to see more of this as the season goes. It's going to take two or three times of them collecting Trevor Bauer's balls before they finally realize, unless obviously something comes of this. But if nothing ever comes from it, they're eventually going to say, okay, we need to look a different direction here. We need to realize he doesn't need to be the target. So we'll see. In the meantime, he's been pitching pretty well for the Dodgers. A couple of good outings. The last one, I think he went about six innings and then ended up losing because the Dodgers, that was to the A's, the Dodgers just couldn't keep it together. But he had kept them at bay. And, you know, what's one loss here or there this early in the season? And right now, everybody in the league is starting to even out. Before, we had a few teams undefeated, a few teams winless. Everybody's got some wins. Everybody's got some losses now. It's starting to even out a little bit. Now, this opening weekend at Dodger Stadium, so they played the A's, took that series, took Thursday off, and then Friday opened up the season at Dodger Stadium. The home opener was pretty incredible. They had the ring ceremony. which was pretty cool. Everybody coming out, getting their rings and all the messages. One of them was pretty funny because they had different players. Usually it was one of their favorites, somebody they looked up to, the player did. And Junior, Ken Griffey Jr., did the message for Joe Kelly. He even did the pout like Joe Kelly did last year, first time that the Dodgers played the Astros there in Houston, the whole incident with Carlos Correa. He did the pout, which was pretty funny. Now it's one of those things where, you know, when somebody does that, you know where it's coming from. So good for you, Joe Kelly. You made a meme moment. I can't say anything about it. I have a t-shirt that has him on there. On Saturday, the team honored Tommy Lasorda, probably the greatest Dodger of them all, definitely the most spirited Dodger of them all. And then on Sunday, it's the 40th anniversary of Fernando Mania, when Fernando Valenzuela came to the team, took over this young rookie, and became a sensation. It's also the 40th anniversary of the 1981 championship team. So it was a really festive weekend. It was an emotional weekend, especially for Dodger fans and those who played. Oral Hershiser, who played for Tommy Lasorda, played with Fernando Valenzuela. All these different guys who, you know, have an impact on the Dodger world, and all the fans being there, getting to appreciate all this, made it even better. The players were all happy about that. So that was pretty cool. The Dodgers took out the Nationals pretty easily. They swept them. First game was only 1-0, but overall, they never looked like they were in a spot that they were in peril, really. They pretty much controlled them. Now, on the Sunday game, it was Kershaw Day, and he took on Max Scherzer, and they both had really good outings. So that was a great Sunday game to be able to watch. And two great pitcher's duel, but the Dodgers end up taking them out. Now, Cody Bellinger run into and kind of kicked in the calf and has a contusion. He's out for he was put on the 10-day IL while he heals up. And then Mookie has been out with back stiffness. He's kind of been like day-to-day, but he hasn't played in a few days, so hopefully that's going to resolve itself here soon. Just needs to stretch it out or whatever. Thankfully for this team, even without Mookie, even without Cody Bellinger, they are still tearing it up. And it just shows what type of team, the depth that they have, and is a good thing for other teams to look at, building the depth. Finding guys like Zach McKinstry, last week's SRBB Player of the Week. He very well could be this week's. He had another great week. He's been out playing right field, filling in for Mookie. He's hitting the ball well. He's definitely finding his place on this team. And there's always been kind of one of those scrappy players that change how the Dodgers look. They come in and they just make the team better when they're in there, and they play like they should be getting paid $40 million a year, but they're getting paid not even a million. And Zach McKinstry is one of those guys. Talking about Player of the Week, and we said Zach might have been, he definitely was a candidate for this week, but I went with Justin Turner. Justin Turner had a great week overall, 10 hits, scored two runs, drove in two with a .378 batting average, and he hit two home runs, which is crazy because he doesn't normally hit home runs in April. I think last year was the first one he'd ever hit in April. Normally it's May, and then he'll hit 20 the rest of the season, but in April he doesn't. Now he's got, I think that's his third already in April. So Justin Turner gets this week's Player of the Week. Like I said, coming in for the Dodgers, the Rockies, and then they get the Padres. The Padres over the weekend is going to be great because we'll get the first look at what this budding rivalry could be. The Giants, very well. When they come to town, I think it'll be a lot the same. So the Dodgers interdivision between the Padres and the Giants are going to have battles every series with them, even more than before, because both teams are better. And the Giants have Buster Posey back, who's been tearing it up. So we will see, and we'll talk about how this week ends up next week. And hopefully Jana will be here to gush about her favorite Dodgers. The Angels, man, they're looking good. In nine games, they have nine home runs. They have homered in every single game this season, or up to this weekend. As of Sunday, they're 6-3, tied with the Astros, who they started their week with. So they had opening weekend versus the White Sox, went 3-1 with them. The Astros come in. They only played two games set with the Astros, split that set 1-1. Talked about earlier that one play with Martin Maldonado coming in. Turned out to not matter that run was scored, even though he didn't touch home plate, because they ended up winning. The next day, Dylan Bundy comes out, pitches pretty well. Mike Trout early on, two-run shot, up 2-0. Next inning, Dylan Bundy came out, gave up back-to-back solo home runs, so it's 2-2, and it stayed that way for quite a while until later in the game when Carlos Correa came out and hit another home run, and that ended up being the winning margin for a 4-2 win. So they split that, but the Angels overall, and I have to say, when they're down, I'm so conditioned as an Angels fan, when they start losing or they start playing poorly, I go, well, here we go again. This is it. And they've found a way. All of the games, as we talked about last week with the White Sox, were come from behind wins. So with the Astros, the split's fine. They had their moments where you feel like, oh no, here we go back again. Mike Trout is quietly doing the things that Mike Trout does, because you don't even realize sometimes. Home runs he's hit have stood out, but he's been on base every game. It seems like he's doing things to keep things going. Jared Walsh, still pretty incredible. Shohei Ohtani, doing well. So they start off there with Houston, and then they go somewhere in Florida to take on the Blue Jays. And they're playing at what is a AAA park. Now, the AAA park is the TD Stadium, I think they call it. It's not a bad-looking stadium. It's just, you know, it's not like what you're expecting. The dimensions are about the same as a Major League Stadium. And last year, the Blue Jays played the AAA Stadium for their team up in Buffalo, which apparently they may be going up there at some point later. Now, the Angels were scheduled for 4 with the Jays. They only got in 3. They're lucky they almost only got in 2. And honestly, with the game on Saturday that they got in, they probably wish it had been rained out. And we'll talk about that in a second. The Sunday game ended up being rained out and will be rescheduled, I think, sometime in August when the Blue Jays come to Anaheim. And it'll be part of a split doubleheader. So it'll be one of those like we saw last year. The visiting team was the home team because their home game got postponed. And then it'll go back to the Angels being the home team. On Thursday night, Zinnings. Went into the 11th. Angels were able to pull it off, but that was one of the longer Zinnings games I've seen out of all of them I've looked. I haven't heard a lot about or seen too many Zinnings games. The Angels went into Zinnings there, grabbed the win. Friday, they broke out, beat the Blue Jays 7-1, solid outing. But Saturday was the day that was an issue. The game was delayed almost 3 hours. They start off, they wanted to get it in because it looked like Sunday was going to be rained out. So they get in, they get playing, and things just were not going right for the Angels. And in one part, there was this crazy double replay. Runner to second slides in, but slides wide. However, he could touch the base. So you have to be able, because it used to be, if you've watched baseball for a lot of years, it used to be they'd have like a take 'em out play where you knew the guy had already, and there was also in the neighborhood plays where you didn't necessarily touch the bag on like a double play so that you could help avoid injuries and things like that. He beat the play is what they would say. The ball was there. He was by the base. He would have been out. We're not gonna fight the details. And then some of those times, the runner, seeing this, would go after the player, the shortstop or second baseman, and try to take him out so that way they couldn't make a good throw or at least alter the throw. The double play started. Jose Iglesias gets it. Second base, first base. Well, the way the player slid, he ended up throwing it way off to the left of the first baseman. So there's an error. The man coming to first is safe, but the man at second had been called out. The Blue Jays ask for a replay, and they show that Iglesias never touched the bag. So the runner at second is safe. The Angels, on the same play, now mind you, this takes about 15, 20 minutes worth of the game time to go through all this stuff. The Angels ask for a replay to say that the runner, he was too far out. They find that he's safe at second, so that goes against the Angels. Then at the end of that replay, they say he wasn't too far out, because like I said, the rule is you have to be able to touch the bag. So he's touched the bag, but the rest of his body is all out, pointing towards center field, sliding. Instead of sliding in a line, he's sliding horizontally across, and that pretty much is what caused Iglesias to throw errantly, because it kind of took him out of the play. That goes against the Angels as well. So they're not happy about that. But following up the next inning, they call for a replay also on a play at first base. And it took them 10 seconds, 15 seconds to get to overturn. So they lost another replay to say he was out. He's still out. And that just sent Joe Maddon off. He was upset, blew his top, hollering at him, arguing with the umpires, going crazy. And so he gets tossed out of the game. And the Angels, usually a lot of times an umpire, a manager will do that, hoping that that fires up his team. Didn't really work this time, as the Angels got doubled up from their score the night before. Remember I said on Friday night it was 7-1. The Angels lose 15-1. They end up winning the series 2-1, and things like that are going to happen occasionally. Just had a bad night, but it was crazy. They did have a home run, though, in that game. That one run was a home run. So like I said towards the beginning, is that I don't think that there's an issue with the Angels offensively. I think they can play with anybody. They've hit a home run in 9 straight games up to Sunday's game. There's no question that they can do that offense and put a lot of runs on the board. The questions will remain, what can the pitchers do? The pitchers have looked good. Even Dylan Bundy didn't look bad in that game versus Houston. It's just he gave up those 2 home runs, and they weren't able to stop them later on, and the team just didn't provide any more offense. So next week, we'll talk about what they're doing this week. They go to Kansas City, and then they're back home to play the Twins. And I'll be going to see the Twins Angels on Friday, get my Ohtani bobblehead, and enjoy a game in person. Get an idea. What does it feel like to be back in the stadium? We were able to get a 2-seat pod versus a lot of times you have to get 5 seats or 4 seats or 3 even. And if you want to go in specific area, you have to pay. The pricing on the tickets are a lot more than what they normally are if everybody was there. And I know they're trying to make up, you know, what's the minimum we can make to pay the people that we have to have here for the things that we have to do. So it'll be interesting to see all that. I'll report back about that next week when I finally get to go to a major league game, which will be very cool. couple things before we get to the player of the week. Out for the season, Dexter Fowler. Tore an ACL, I believe it was. He's having surgery 6 to 9 months. He's supposed to be out, so he's out for the season. And then Anthony Rendon's having some issues as well. He's on the 10-day IL, so hopefully he'll be back in pretty quickly. As far as player of the week goes, I had three or four options. Shohei has become an option, you know, so far in the first few games here, the first 9 games of the season. Jared Walsh, absolutely. Last week's player of the week, Max Stassi, another one who has been hitting very well. He doesn't have enough plate appearances to, he's batting well over 300, but he doesn't have enough plate appearances to qualify the list of the top hitters. This week, I'm going to do something that I generally don't do, simply because he's earned it, and there's no way around it. It's Mike Trout is the player of the week. He's doing the things that we expect from Mike Trout. It's been huge. He hit home runs in 3 consecutive games, one against Houston, 2 against the Blue Jays, over the 5 games of the week. He had 8 hits, scored 5 runs, drove in 3, walked 4 times, and then had those 3 home runs. He's batting over 400 right now. Obviously, it's early in the season. Things like that change. But he's it. Player of the week. He's definitely been driving this team just as we expected. And what he wants to do, he wants to get this team to the playoffs. And he's surrounded by enough guys that can help him. And they have a team that doesn't have to be carried by one guy. It can be carried by more than one. So congratulations to Mike Trout. We're in the home stretch, and then I will get in touch with NASA or whoever. What's the Space Force? Whoever it is that might work with tracking down aliens and see if we can find out where Jana was abducted off to. What planet or solar system or whatever that she may be touring right now. Hopefully she's having a good time. They're not using her for experiments. All right, another crazy week in, I think this is all the craziness of the beginning of baseball after the oddities that we had last season. This season, everybody's got to get back in, settle in, see what's going on. Every year we have players that break out. Yermín Mercedes, Will Myers from the Padres, of course, Mercedes from the White Sox, still tearing it up, these guys. And you've got other players that are coming around that are making an impact. And will it continue? You know, how many times do we see players start off the beginning of the season strong and then fade off after the All-Star break? And it's the idea of, especially with rookies, rookies are used to playing shorter seasons. So once they come up, they give it their all for all that, and then it kind of fades off. That'll be the one thing to watch, is how do the players go through the season and can they maintain the torrid pace they're on now? Some of them, they can, because we've seen them do it before. Others, like Yermín Mercedes, this is their first time up here. They're not sure what it's like to play 162 games like that and the pressures that come with it, especially for a team with like the White Sox, who has great expectations on their team. So there's pressure that goes with that. Lots happened during the week. We had a no-hitter, first ever for that team. The Mets had that strange ending to the game, like we talked about with Michael Conforto. We talked about that a little bit. I mentioned that the Blue Jays, they're not going to stay in Florida very long. The first 22 games of the season were scheduled for Florida, and then that was to give them time to do things up in Buffalo at Celine Stadium. And then they're going to go up there and play there until things change in Canada, where they're able to go back home and play. They hope to go back to Canada later in the season. If not, they'll finish everything up in Buffalo. And their team, which starts the season, their AAA team, the Bison, which starts the season on May 6th, as I mentioned, the AAA season does, are going to play in Trenton at the former home of the Trenton Thunder. The Thunder became a defunct Major League minor league team when they changed everything and cut teams and Major League Baseball took over minor league baseball. So luckily for them and for the people of Trenton, and we'll talk about this a little bit if Jana ever comes back, because she used to go to the Trenton Thunder games. She lived there in New Jersey, not far from Trenton, and she can give us some insight as to what the Bison are going to be enjoying while they're there playing in Trenton the stadium. Big thing that probably got announced to all the Rockies fans, Nolan Arenado hit a home run in the Cardinals home opener. So I'm sure they were told that. And then I've heard, I haven't seen it yet, but there are Rockies fans who bought Nolan Arenado St. Louis jerseys and are wearing those to the game. The question will be, when the Cardinals come in, what kind of response will Nolan Arenado get? It sounds like he's going to get a pretty positive response because they're blaming it on management, not on Nolan Arenado. Somebody wrote recently about since the change of the All-Star game being in Colorado now, Nolan Arenado being part of the home run contest. Just because. Not because he's a prolific home run hitter, but just because. Right, Lance Lynn of the White Sox struck out 11 Kansas City Royals and picked up the first complete game of the 2021 season. Of course, like I told you, your mean Mercedes on a hot streak for the White Sox. And then Jock Peterson hits his first home run as a Cub, and when he comes back in, instead of high fives, gave him a waffle maker, an actual waffle maker in the box for his first home run as a Cub, and apparently he was pretty excited about it. I think the deal was he and a teammate, Ian Happ, were talking about that making waffles might help wake up the bats. So this waffle maker actually belongs to Ian Happ. I think he has to give it back to him. Happ told him that he'd bring the waffle maker. You know, you're going to waffle some balls. First home run of the season and first home run of as a Cub for Jocelyn. And it tied up the game for the Cubs. They did go on to lose to Milwaukee. Now, when Milwaukee was in St. Louis, Colton Wong got a really great reception from the St. Louis crowd, even kind of brought him to tears. So that was kind of cool that they appreciated him for his time there, and of course he appreciated them. It's been said that the St. Louis fans are some of the best fans in baseball, just simply because they know baseball. Looking around the league, I was looking at the standings finishing up the week. When we started out, we had a few teams who were undefeated, some that were winless, and now we're seeing things starting to even out a little bit. As of the weekend, Boston, the Red Sox, started out 0-3. Baltimore swept them, are now leading the league. They've won six in a row. They're 6-3. They lead the AL East, while the rest of the AL East is all at 4-5. And then Cleveland, they now lead the Central, 5-3. Kansas City, who started out pretty strong, 4-3. Minnesota, the White Sox, who started off 1-3, are coming back around 4-5 now. So there's a lot of changes. Both the Angels and the Astros tied up for the top. Seattle is in third place. So right now, it almost looks like what we said it was going to be: Houston, LA, Mariners. Now the weird thing is, Oakland is at the bottom. They've just now started winning some. They're 3-7 as of the weekend. It's just kind of strange that Texas is only ahead of them just because they've lost one less. They've only played 9 games. Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Philadelphia off to a great start. The rest of the East is below 500. Atlanta's only 4-5. The Mets didn't get to start off because of the Washington problems, the Nationals problems with COVID. They're still trying to make up games. Miami not playing well either. Cincinnati off to a great start, 6-3 to start off the season. Milwaukee not bad, 5-4. And then, of course, like I said, the Dodgers and the Padres, both with the two best records in baseball, 8-2 and 7-3 to start off the season. And speaking of the Padres, I'm just going to bounce around here with around the league. The Padres got something they had never had happen before. And actually, I'll get to that in a second. Let's go back to the East. Boston, like I said, they're on a win streak, six games, and a lot of it could be attributed to the AL Player of the Week for last week, J.D. Martinez. Had a three-home run game, which is the third team that he's done that with. He's just been on it, which he's the J.D. Martinez that they signed, that they wanted on this team, and he's helped them. So they're coming together. The Red Sox are playing pretty well, and like I said, they're on top. Lots of issues still for the Yankees. Judge out. Momentarily, maybe miss a game here, is having some issues. Giancarlo Stanton is there, but it feels like this is going to be another one of those Yankees seasons. Gerrit Cole is going to be the one great pitcher. They'll get a decent outing here and there, but not great, and they're going to have a lot of issues. They're having issues with Gleyber Torres at shortstop, so no telling what's going to happen there. And then, of course, we talked about the Blue Jays a little bit ago versus the Halos. In the East, the NL East, like I said, the Phillies are the only team that are really on top of it, have a winning record. One of the sad things is Jake DeGrom. Jacob DeGrom, the other day versus the Marlins, threw eight innings, gave up five hits, one run, struck out 14. He even had a hit to raise his batting average to 600 on the season, and they lost 3-0 because he gets no offense. And I heard an interesting stat. I think Brian Kinney on MLB Now brought this up. The Mets have a losing record in Jake DeGrom's outings, yet Jake DeGrom has a 2.06 ERA. So he's pitching fantastically. The Mets just can't score any runs. So that's probably going to be a problem. It's not going to matter that they have Francisco Lindor and any other player that they have. If they can't support Jacob DeGrom and one of their best and any of the other pitchers that they have, it's going to be a hard season for them. Mentioned also the Indians seem to be turning things around. Thought it was interesting. I was looking at, you know, early in the season, one of the favorite stats is they're on pace for. So like last week we talked about Tatis Jr. from the Padres, that he was on pace before he got injured, on pace for 162 errors on the season because he'd had at least one per game. I looked at some others. Shane Bieber on pace for 408 strikeouts. The record for a season is Nolan Ryan back in 1973 at 383 strikeouts. If he can keep up at his pace, then he will blow that record away. 408 strikeouts on the season. Chances are it's not going to happen. He'll have some down outings. But even in bad outings, he's still striking out 12 like he did on opening day. Another one I thought was funny was the league-leading Reds, Tyler Naquin. 108 home runs is what he's on, or he was on pace for. Nick Castellanos, 107 home runs is what he was on pace for. It's funny to do those numbers because they're just astronomical. They'd blow away, you know, the most home runs in a season, 73. That's 30 more plus. So that would be pretty incredible if it happened. But like anything, it'll all fall. And then as we get later in the season, people slow down. You get settled in, you get tired, you get injured, you have all those little things. So that's probably not gonna keep up. But it's fun to look at, is what I'm saying. And then the last one of those projections that I saw that were good projections was Nate Lowe, who plays for the Rangers, is projected at 378 RBIs, which would completely blow away the current season record of 191. Hack Wilson set that back in like 1930 as a member of the Cubs. That's pretty unrealistic as well, but it's fun to look at. If only they could stay on that pace, it would just take a superhuman season, really. It's a grind. You got to stay with it the whole time. All right, so let's go back to the Padres now real quick. Joe Musgrove, who is a local San Diego guy, comes there, has a good outing the first time out in San Diego, goes to Texas, and does something that has never been done. I don't think it's ever been done at the Grill, Globe Life Field. So it was the first ever no-hitter at Globe Life Field. It was the first no-hitter of the 2021 season. And, of course, the biggest thing is the first no-hitter in Padres history. And the first no-hitter Joe Musgrove ever threw. So, I mean, there's a lot of history being made there. And wasn't it just the Padres who were there last year hitting like 9 grand slams in Globe Life Field? They may want to move there and start playing their games there because they seem to make a lot of history at Globe Life Field. The Rangers aren't, but seems like the Padres are. So that was a pretty incredible, and that got Joe Musgrove named the NL Player of the Week, joining J.D. Martinez as the AL Player of the Week. So we talked about the NL West. The Dodgers obviously are at top. We'll see how Tatis Jr. being on the IL, how much that affects the Padres, if at all, because they have a strong team around him and great pitching with like Joe Musgrove. The other team that we need to watch coming out of there, that the Giants always play the Dodgers tough. The Giants have a winning record as well. They are not messing around, and they beat the Padres 2 of the 3 games they've played this season. Everything's going to settle down. It always does. The beginning of the season is craziness. All this stuff is happening. And then the bad plays, obviously the umpiring, I don't know if that's going to change and settle down and get better. We hope it does. But the rest of it, your mean Mercedes is going to slow down. But will he overall have a great season? That's the wonderful thing about this, is that you can't just decide now. You have to watch the whole thing. You got to stay in it for the whole 162 to see how things play out. Now, obviously, injuries come into play. People go on cold streaks, never recover. Some people get injured, come back, and can't pick it back up. There are players that have started off cold that'll turn hot as the season goes, and vice versa. It's going to be, in the long haul, there is a lot to watch for. There's a lot of interesting pieces. I think that the All-Star Game, the Home Run Derby in Denver is probably going to be one thing that we can definitely look forward to for the middle of the season and who's part of it. And of course, can these teams, like my Angels, even the Dodgers, Padres, the Reds, the Phillies, can these teams all keep up with the start that they have? Things are looking good for the Angels. They're looking better than they have in the past when they may start off strong or have a good streak, because the overall, the pitching is not all leaning to one side now to lean to another later. The Dodgers, they just look like the Dodgers, and they're showing, like we said, with Zach McKinstry and others stepping up, that you can have guys set out for a little while and these other guys can pick it up and maintain the high level that the Dodgers have established for themselves. The grind continues, and I can't wait to see what happens as we get deeper into the season. Baseball is life. There is nothing like baseball. That'll do it for this week's Sibling Rivalry Baseball podcast. Remember, you can find us on social media, Twitter, at Sibling Rivalry BB without the A, on Facebook and Instagram, Sibling Rivalry BB, and of course on our website, siblingrivalrybb.com. Next week on SRBB, hopefully we're able to recover Jana from wherever she is. Like I said, all that weird noise, I believe it was alien abduction. Not sure, but could have been. And we'll have to figure out where she is. If not, I guess I'll be either doing this. We'll have to change the name of the show. Jeff's Baseball Podcast or Solo Rivalry. I could just talk to myself and disagree with myself and argue with myself every week about baseball. Yeah. Jeff's Solo Baseball Rivalry Podcast. Oh, we need Jana to come back. That's just not going to be good. Either way, remember to keep your eye on the ball and swing away.